Let's go behind the bench, though. Time to have a chat with Seth Epper, Sabre assistant coach. Go behind the bench on WGR, brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. By Steve Foley Law. If you've been injured, it's time to get serious. Time to call Steve Foley Law. And by the Orthopedic Center at St. Joseph Campus, Sabre assistant coach Seth Epper joining us. We do Lindy some days. We do Seth Epper. We're going to get some players in. And right now it's the Sabre assistant coach. Seth, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for taking some time today.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We opened the show today talking about last night's game, and you know, I'm sure moral victories are cheap, or maybe don't really exist. But both Joe and I kind of felt like that was a game that was there to be had, and sometimes a fairly even hockey game ends with a score that looks a little bit more crooked than it was. I thought it was a really nice effort from your team, and particularly the second period, rallying down from 2-0 to get that game to even.
Yeah, the second period was a good response. You know, I think as a staff, we probably don't feel we were as good as we need to be last night. From, you know, just from controlling the play and creating enough offensive opportunities at a 5-on-5. So, you know, I think the scoreboard, you know, was what it was at the end of the day. I think the good part was I don't think we were at our best. We still gave ourselves a great chance to win. Against the defending Stanley Cup champions in the game, we got down 2-0 right away.
In terms of the overall gameplay, Seth, and kind of the style of play, does it feel like the intensity, though, was there from beginning to end? I mean, there were some penalties that were taken. The refs kind of felt like they were calling a lot in that game on both sides. In terms of the intensity, how did you feel like the style of this team this year matches up with the Florida?
Yeah, we're on our way towards being that, and that's the goal, right? And it doesn't happen overnight. You know, they're years into that, and we're what, 10 games or whatever it is, into trying to play the style that Lindy wants us to play. You know, fast, competitive, hard on the puck, getting to the blue paint offensively, and we've taken big steps in that regard, and there was a lot of that last night, but we just need to keep building, you know, building on what we've done so far.
How optimistic are you to see the power play now score for a second consecutive game? I know as the season, you know, as a whole, still doesn't look great numbers-wise. How do you feel like the process, though, has gone there, and are you seeing real improvement other than just even the goals going in the back of the net?
Yeah, it's something that we have to get better at for sure. At the beginning of the year, it wasn't near good enough, and that's on me to provide solutions for our players. But I think that our guys have done a really good job working on it, and our process has been good. And we were starting to see that before the results, and that's the way it always works. As a coaching staff, you see things that are heading in a good direction before the public gets to see them, because the way we're practicing the details. And I think we had a 5-game stretch before we scored 2 games ago where we were 6th in the NHL in our power play entry percentage. We were 5th in the NHL in creating high danger passing situations, which lead this to the high end scoring chances. So the faceoffs have been an issue on the power play, certainly, and we're continuing to work on that. So we were seeing a good process that we were seeing in practice. It was coming out in games. We had about 3 or 4 real good efforts before we finally got the results. Even in the Dallas game, we only had 1 power play. We didn't score, but we created a ton of momentum because of the scoring chances that were created off of it. That positive momentum then led to us scoring 2 5-on-5 goals to break that game open a couple minutes later. And that's the power play. You want to create momentum for your team. Certainly you want to score, which we did last night, but you want to create positive momentum with the process, with the habits, with the work ethic that goes into it.
Seth, one thing I wonder, you know, as you break down some of those stats about where you're ranked in zone entry percentage, and whether it's the NHL or the AHL or the college level, you know, are today's coaches and today's players digging into those numbers? Like, for instance, the power play is struggling, but you can take it to the group and say, guys, we are 6th in successful zone entries. Like, the work is starting to pay off. Is that something you normally do? And do the players, does it help to dig into that? Whether it's a 5-game sample, in the last 3 games, whatever it might be, when you can show them that there are results even though they're not on the scoreboard yet.
Yes, that's something that I did in Rochester a lot, that we do here in Buffalo. It's good for the players to have proof that what we're working on is there's payoff to that, that the process is working, that is leading to good results. And sometimes wins and losses in our industry can skew your view of the process. And that's our job as a coaching staff to navigate through the mud, so to speak, and get down to the things that matter. And sometimes pointing out, having the numbers to back up those things are important to get the player buy-in that you need to be successful.
I want to go back to the power play for just a moment, Seth. Last year, Tage Thompson saw a drop in power play production. That could have been a lot of things, too, not just the power play itself, but he was dealing with injuries. This year, looking at the unit that you guys have together, how important – I'm thinking of Paterka for this because he has not spent as much time on the power play up until this season. How important is his spot for – I almost want to say opening up Thompson on the other side? Because it looked like teams, especially last year, really started queuing in on him and paying more attention to him. Is it up to Paterka or the unit as a whole to kind of create more space for Tage?
Yes. I mean, I've said this before, the league isn't just going to let Dahlin pass to Tage and hit one-timers anymore. And so where Tage is going to get his shots are more from creating chaos and putting the penalty kill in stressful situations. Well, you can only do that in two ways, really. And one of the ways is winning loose puck battles on recoveries. Both the goal we scored last, the scoring chances we created last night in our second power play, and the goal we got the game before were on a lot of loose puck recoveries. So then you get how do you get loose puck recoveries? Usually it's by shooting a puck first. So shot creates chaos, get the penalty kill into chaos, win a puck battle, and then your opportunity to hit Tage starts to increase. That's where he got the shot the other night, which led to Zucker's goal. The more threatening JJ is, JJ had a great one-timer last night that he almost tied the game on that Bobrovsky made a big save. He just missed one, probably off the knob of the goalie's stick in the Detroit game. So the more dangerous JJ becomes on the other flank, and the more they have to honor that, then yes, the more opportunity that creates for Tage.
Sabres assistant coach Seth Ebert joining us on the Wester Hotline after last night's game against Florida. You know, as we think about this team, and one of the problems maybe that's cropping up a lot is the number of penalties and how often you're on the penalty kill. Maybe the best penalty kill is not taking penalties. What is there that you can do as a team to just play smarter, be smarter, take fewer penalties? Because it does seem like there have been a couple games where the parade to the penalty box has been the biggest problem.
Yeah, it's really hard to have a great penalty kill if you have to kill four or five off. And it's a lot easier to have a great penalty kill if you only have, one, two, or three. And that's the reality of it. If you keep giving their best players opportunities, that's a recipe for disaster. And so, there's a balance. We are trying to build an identity that we're hard to play against, that coming into this building is going to be demanding. We're going to be physical. We're going to win puck battles. We're going to pay a price to get to the blue paint. We're going to pay a price to keep you away from our blue paint. And there's growing pains and learning that comes with that identity, and sometimes the cross the line. And we need to become more disciplined and have accountability to each other to not take unnecessary penalties. Some penalties, the penalties you take to prevent a great scoring chance, the penalties that are a little more violent sometimes in nature, it's amazing that you usually find ways to kill those off. And the penalties that are a little more undisciplined, the hookings, the holdings, the penalties that aren't as impactful in the play, a lot of times those are the ones that end up in the back of your net.
Seth, you have previous experience, obviously, even before this season with Jack Quinn in Rochester, and he is sitting on right now just 2 points on the season, scored the empty net goal the other night. He also, of course, dealt with injuries last year that could be affecting him even now. But for your eyes, where is he at, and how far away do you think he is from getting back to being an important offensive contributor on the team?
Well, I'd say number one, I have all the belief in the world in him from my time with him, seeing him overcome and rise through adversity throughout his time in Rochester and here. There is a reality to the guys, and he's one of them, that missed a massive amount of time. He almost missed the whole season last year. And getting back into game situations, feeling the pressure of games, the competitiveness of games, the quickness of mind that you have to play with in terms of your decision making, and then also the physical ability to withstand physical games because of some of the time you've missed. So there is a process that it takes to getting back to being comfortable at game speed that I'm sure he's going through. Like I said, I've got all the faith in Jack in the world that he's gonna work through this and become the complete player and the offensive player that we know he can become.
And then one other individual that I want to get to with you. How have you feel like he didn't play last night, but otherwise has been in the lineup? How do you feel like Yuri Kulik has made the transition to the NHL this year?
I think he's done some really good things, and there's growing pains that come with that. But you know, there's been more often than not, he's been dangerous on the ice when he's played. He's attacked offensively. He's used his shot as an advantage. He's created scoring opportunities for himself and his teammates. I think he's playing on the inside. That's something, you know, he had to learn coming from Europe, winning battles, being strong on the puck. You know, the things that we've been on him about in the American League over the last couple of years, like you, when you come up to the NHL, usually you're not going to just go score, you know, over a point a game in your first 10, 15, 20 games, whatever that is. And so things that keep you in the lineup, things that keep getting you opportunities are the details. Do you back check well? Do you check well? Do you win puck battles? Are you good on the wall? Because coaches play players that they trust, not that are just talented. And so Yuri's done a real good job earning some of Lindy's trust, which has earned more ice time, which then he has more opportunity to show the offensive weapons that he has.